Well, welcome everybody. Welcome to the November call. I really want to start by saying how excited we all are that after 13 visits to Parliament Hill, hundreds of letters and op-eds, all kinds of meetings, all kinds of outreach through Canada, that since last month's call, Canada has enacted a national fee and dividend plan. I think that's exciting, not just for Canada. I think that's exciting for the whole organization because it's something we've all been pulling for so long. To see it actually start to be put in place, that is really, really remarkable. And to Kathy and the team up there for everything you did, fantastic. And I think the rest of us are so excited and thrilled to be part of that. I also want to thank everybody that already called in yesterday as part of Congressional Call-In Day. We had twice as many calls yesterday as the previous time we did a Congressional Call-In Day, so that's a lot of activity. You can still call if you haven't had a chance to yet, but a lot of calls yesterday to congressional offices, and that was fantastic. We are in D.C. getting ready for Congressional Education Day. There are 621 people registered for the event that starts on Monday, which is the most people that we've ever had come to our November event. And we have 410 meetings, which is way more than seems realistic that we could get this time of year. We'll be talking about the election with our guests in just a couple of minutes, and then we'll go over what we're doing this month. And I know that there's obviously things that people are probably excited about and things that you're disappointed about and things that you're relieved about. And I think as an entire organization, we're, I would bet almost all of us disappointed that Carlos Covello was not able to win re-election. We have invited him to come to the reception Tuesday night so we can really, you know, thank him for how great he's been and for his leadership and his courage. And I certainly hope he makes it. You know, it's I don't know if you've ever been in a congressional office after they lose an election, but it's not a happy place. And so we've extended the invitation. We'll continue to extend the invitation between now and Tuesday. But I certainly hope he can get there so that we can really thank him on behalf of our organization for just the extraordinary courage and leadership over the last few years in building the Climate Solutions Caucus. Okay, so our guest today, Dr. Anthony Leisowitz from the Yale Program on Climate Change. Dr. Leisowitz is an expert on public opinion and public engagement with issues of climate change and the environment. His research investigates the psychological, cultural, and political factors that influence environmental beliefs, attitudes, policy, support, and behavior. But here's what I want to say about Anthony. We have a lot of organizations, a lot of people that we work with very closely. But we have a small set of people that are particularly important to our organization. And so we reach out to them more often than just about anybody. So I would include in that subset Catherine Hayhoe and James Hansen and Hari Hahn and Bob Inglis. And Anthony Leisowitz is one of those people. He's because of how good their work is, how important their work is, we reach out to Anthony just a little bit more often. And we really wanted him to be on this call coming out of the November election, and he actually rearranged some things to make that possible. So, Anthony, thank you so much. It's great to have you here, and welcome to our November call.
Thank you so much, Mark, and it's a pleasure to be with everybody, and wonderful to see how many people are coming to D.C., as well as are online. It's a real testament to this entire team and crew over the years of just how incredibly you've grown. So congratulations to everyone. Let me share my screen and let me make sure that people can see it. So Mark, can you see my screen?
Yep, we can.
Okay,
yep.
And you can hear me okay?
Yep.
Okay, great. All right, just to kind of extend that introduction just a bit, so I direct the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication. And we're trying to study how Americans are responding to this issue. So what do they understand? What do they misunderstand about the causes, the consequences, and solutions? How do they perceive the risks of climate change? What kinds of policies do they support or oppose? And what kinds of behaviors are Americans engaged in around climate change and energy, including political behavior? So not just consumer behavior, energy use, and so on, but political behavior. So we've been spending a lot of time trying to understand what leads some citizens to, like you, roll up their sleeves and say, I'm not going to stand on the sidelines and watch while the world burns. I want to get involved and do what I can to get larger systemic and political change. So I'll touch on that as part of this presentation. The other thing I'll say is we've been doing this now for well over a decade, and I'll be sharing some of those larger trend lines because While we do a little bit of work in the electoral space, that's not really our main interest. Our main interest is the larger and larger scale and longer term trends in public opinion, if I can use the term, the political climate of climate change. Because in our view, the more that political climate within America as a whole, within each of the states, within each of the congressional districts, within every city and jurisdiction in the country, as that political climate shifts, we will see winds more frequently, those winds will go farther, and they will be more sustainable. So really our primary interest is that larger shifts in overall public opinion and engagement, which I'll touch on here in a moment. Okay, so let me just quickly give you a sense of where we are at this moment. And that's again drawing on this decade's set of studies that we've been doing called Climate Change in the American Mind. This is a nationally representative survey that we conduct twice a year. And we're just about to go into the field with our next survey. So please stay tuned because we will have fresh data that we are really hoping will help tee up the new Congress that will be sworn in come January in terms of where Americans are, what kinds of policies they're really interested in. So let's start at the beginning with how are Americans engaged with this issue right now? So first of all, we've been tracking how Americans are, do they even believe that climate change is happening? And if you'll see back in 2008, and here you're seeing all of these different surveys that we've conducted over time. And back in fall of 2008, we hit kind of a high water mark when 71% of Americans did accept that climate change was happening. But then we saw a huge 14 percentage point drop. Here, let me just switch it to this.
Anthony, can you go to full? Oh, there we go, full screen. Thank you. That's exactly what we were looking for. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay.
So we saw a big 14 percentage point drop. This was coincident with the rise of the Tea Party, which is the power of organizing, which is the power of a small group of people who come together and say, this issue and these set of issues really matter to us. Those issue publics is the critical political science term. Those have enormous influence on the American political system. And I would put CCL right at the top of those organizations that are now organized around trying to build such an issue public for climate change. I'll come back to that later. So we saw that the Tea Party had this huge influence on American overall public opinion about climate change that then slowly worked its way back up until we're now basically back where we were in 2008. Okay. The context, of course, though, is very different today. This is the Trump administration versus where we were back here when it was the beginning of the Obama administration. Okay, but we still have plenty of room to grow on. 70% is okay. In Japan, it would be about 95-98%. So America still could go further. But also importantly, only 58% of Americans understand that global warming is caused by human activities. And that's important because if you don't understand that it's human caused, then why would you do something like put a price on carbon? That doesn't seem to make much sense if it's just natural. Okay, maybe that's something we have to adapt to, but it's hard to understand why we would need to do something like climate policy. So this number is one of the more important ones as of now. Many Americans still just don't understand that this is mostly human caused. And one of the things that leads to, among others, is that very few Americans are that worried about climate change. So one thing that needs to be said is that we are at kind of an all-time high, so that's good. At 21% now who say that they're very worried. That's better even than we were back in 2008. But it's only 21%. And that's because many Americans still think of climate change as a distant problem, distant in time, that the impacts won't be felt for a generation or more, and distant in space. This is about maybe some polar bears or maybe developing countries, but not the United States, not my state, not my community, not my friends, not my family, or any of the people and places that I care about. And as a result, it's seen as psychologically distant. Just one of those other issues that's out there. Maybe I kind of wish somebody would do something about it, but it doesn't seem that urgent. It doesn't seem that important compared to many other issues. So this is also a fundamental concern or need within the American public is to understand that this actually is a really serious issue and it's something that we cannot wait a generation to deal with. So also one of the most important measures you can look at is this sense of national priority. And so we've been tracking this again over many years, and here's the number of people who say global warming should be a very high priority for the next president in Congress. And what you can see here very clearly is this partisan split. Among Democrats, Democrats have really a very stark, strong upward trend in concern about this issue and saying this should be one of the top priority issues for our federal government. Independents have also more than doubled since basically the bottoming out in about 2012. And that's also an encouraging sign, though not as strong as you see among Democrats. But among Republicans, you know, there was this drop. It stayed pretty level. It's been coming up just a bit in the past couple of years, which I think is important to see. But overall, it's just far, far lower than it is for either Democrats or independents. And this is why engaging Republicans constructively on this issue is still a fundamental need. But another way to look at this, and I know this is a complicated slide, but this is I'll walk you through it, and it's pretty simple, really. Back in March, back in the primaries, we asked how important will global warming be to your vote in the 2018 congressional election? And what you see nationally is that among 28 different issues, global warming was number 15. And that's, it's a little better than it has been in recent years, but it's clearly been not one of the top issues, okay? And back then, as of all through the campaign, healthcare was number one, and the economy and Social Security. Gun policies was really in the news a lot then, so that was high, and so on. So climate change has often been seen as a second, third, or even fourth tier issue. But it gets much more interesting when you start breaking this down by liberal Democrats, moderate conservative Democrats, liberal moderate Republicans, and conservative Republicans. Here you see two critical things. One is the partisan gap. So among liberal Democrats, it's high. Among conservative Republicans, it's dead last. Right? So that is the nature of this issue, where climate change has become more politically polarized than abortion. Yeah, I just said that. Climate change has become more politically polarized than abortion. Okay. So again, this is why there is a real need to find ways to constructively engage Republicans, especially liberal moderate Republicans. But I would say conservatives as well. But the other thing I want to point out is that climate change was number four among liberal Democrats, with environmental protection number three. That is one of the top tier issues. And that was not the case 5 years ago. That's a remarkable accomplishment that climate change is now one of the top priority issues, one of the top agenda issues among the, let's call it the progressive base of the Democratic Party, one of our two major political parties. So that's really remarkable. Now, granted, this gap needs to be crossed, but this is something that's really quite impressive, and of course will have consequences now that Democrats have taken control of the House. And a number of them actually ran on climate change. Climate change actually was a campaign issue in several districts across the country. And of course, Democrats are going to do a number of things, including reconstituting a select committee on climate change. So there will be new hearings about the science and the impacts and the vulnerability of the country, as well as beginning to lay the foundations of a policy which could happen perhaps in the next 2 years, though I wouldn't hold my breath. But certainly in terms of laying the grounds for what could happen in 2021 when we have a new president and, of course, a new Congress. Okay, but I don't want to leave you with the impression that we're just hopelessly polarized on this issue, because while we are polarized on the climate change issue, we're not so polarized. In fact, there's actually a strong social consensus on some of the key solutions, in particular around clean energy. So here's just standing in for a whole bunch of other questions we've asked about funding more research into clean energy. 87% of all registered voters support that, including 76% of conservative Republicans. Okay. Likewise, generating renewable energy on public land, overwhelming public support, including by conservative Republicans. Providing rebates for people who purchase energy efficient vehicles or solar panels, 73% of conservative Republicans support that. Even regulating CO2 as a pollutant, you'll find 61% of conservatives supporting that. It isn't until you get to renewable portfolio standards, which is essentially government telling business what to do, that conservative problems become less than half. So the fact is that when it comes to some of the solutions, there's actually much more political consensus in this country than you might otherwise expect. And then this also is a question that we've been tracking for many years. Now, this doesn't, of course, perfectly align with the key policy that CCL has been focused on, a fee and dividend type approach. But this is related. And what we have found consistently is that Americans say that they are willing to require fossil fuel companies to pay a carbon tax. And yes, we use the word tax. Don't run away from that, because that is what opponents are going to label anything, as the advocates in Washington just learned, is that you can call it a fee, but they're going to call it a tax, and they're going to spend millions of dollars trying to call it a tax. So you better be able to win even when your opponents call it that. To pay a carbon tax and use the money to reduce other taxes, such as income taxes, by an equal amount. 71% of all registered voters support that, including overwhelming numbers of liberal Democrats, moderate conservative Democrats, even liberal moderate Republicans, and about half of conservative Republicans, which is remarkable. However, I will also point out that these opinions, this policy support, is relatively weakly held. This isn't like something deeply held that people have strong, strong, firm opinions that are unchangeable. When this is support for the abstract idea of a carbon tax imposed like this, if there was actually legislation to do this, you can absolutely guarantee that the fossil fuel companies and their allies would be spending many, 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 many millions of dollars to try to attack and savage this basic proposal, which is exactly what we saw happen in the state of Washington. I think, what was it, three fossil fuel companies poured about $31 million into trying to attack that ballot initiative. So don't take these numbers as gospel, but it at least tells you that people's kind of initial feelings about this is that they are actually surprisingly supportive of this notion of a carbon tax. Okay, another thing that I think many of you have encountered before, but I'll quickly use this to set up a more important point, is our work identifying what we call global warming's six Americas, that Americans don't have a single viewpoint on climate change. They have diverse viewpoints. And if you want to engage them effectively, you need to meet each person where they are. Don't just assume they're all immediately alarmed about climate change, or assume that they're absolutely hostile to climate change. That's actually not the case. There's much more diversity going on in the country. And here are those six different groups. As of last March, 21% are alarmed. They are fully convinced it's happening, it's human caused, it's urgent, they strongly support policy action, but they often don't know what to do. They don't know what they can do as individuals, they don't know what we can do as communities, as cities, as states, as the nation, or even the world. So they're really engaged, they're really worried, but they often don't know what to do about it. And that, I'll come back to why that's so important. Then comes a group that we call the concerned, happening, it's human caused, it's important, but they tend to think of it again as distant in time and space. So yeah, I'd support action, but it doesn't seem like an urgent priority. Then a group we call the cautious are still on the fence. Is it real? Is it not? Is it human? Is it natural? They're paying attention, but just haven't really made up their mind yet. Then a small but important group we call the disengaged, who say, you know, I think I once heard that word global warming, but I don't know what that is. I don't know anything about it. What the causes are, what the consequences are, what the solutions are. So it's not an ideological barrier, it's just basic awareness that is holding them back. Then a group we call the doubtful, who are like, it's probably not real, but if it is, it's natural, just natural cycles, nothing we had anything to do with, nothing we can do much about, so they don't pay it much attention. And then last but not least are the dismissive, who are firmly convinced it's not happening, not human caused, not serious, and in fact, most of whom tell us pretty bluntly that they're conspiracy theorists. It's a hoax, it's scientists making up data, it's a UN plot to take away our sovereignty, it's a get-rich scheme by Al Gore and his friends, and many other such conspiracies. Now, importantly, they're only 9%. They're only 9%, but they're a really loud 9%. They're a really vocal 9%, And as many of you know, they're more than well represented in the halls of Congress. So they have made themselves appear to be 50% or more of the country, but they're not. They're just loud. And in fact, in some cases, they're louder than these people, even though the alarmed are outnumber them 2-1. Okay. So this is about owning the public square. This is about owning public discourse. And the fact is that they punch way above their weight because we let them. Okay, now here's the important thing. So here we've asked Americans, how willing or unwilling would you be to join a campaign to convince elected officials to take action to reduce global warming? This is essentially the DNA question of CCL. And what we find when you look at this across each of these different groups is, and let's just focus on the alarmed and the concerned, that here are the people that say, I am participating in a campaign like this now, or I definitely would do it. That's these two colors. Or here are the ones that say, I probably would do it. So what does that translate to? If you just take these four boxes right here, among the alarmed and the concerned, that's 26 million Americans who say that they are or definitely would join such a campaign. Now, just to put that into context, and because really this is about building a movement. This is about building what in political science we call an issue public. And you know what issue publics look like. It's the pro or anti gun movement. It's the pro or anti-immigration movement. It's the pro-choice or anti-abortion movements. Think of the NRA. Okay, the NRA is a clear example of a highly motivated, organized issue public that has enormous political clout. How many people are in the NRA? About 4 million. We have 26 million just in these people who say that they definitely would join. And if you added those who say they probably would join, it would be 67 million. The difference is that they're organized and this community has yet to be organized. Okay. Now that, of course, has been changing in the past few years in no small part thanks to the hard work of CCL and everyone associated with it, as well as a few other groups. But we have a good ways to go, but the point is that this is a huge potential political movement if we get organized. So we know that there's a lot of potential out there, but why don't people do it? Why don't they get engaged? So we ask that question too, what's preventing you? So the barriers to contacting elected officials, number one, is that nobody has ever asked me to. Really? It's that stupid? Just ask. And it's by far the largest reason. Okay? People are like, yeah, I'm really worried about this issue. I want to get involved. But nobody's ever asked. Okay? That's not about changing someone's political identity or changing their worldview or challenging their values or asking them to change their identity. It's saying, just ask. Okay. And that's really what, you know, organizations like CCL are all about, is actually coming together as like-minded, caring citizens, but then reaching out to your own social networks, your own friends, your own family, your own coworkers, and finding other people who actually just need to be asked to get involved. I'm not an activist is an important one because people don't know what an activist looks like. They often think that that means you got to have long dreadlock hair and hug trees and so on. I've just been looking at all the pictures of people around on this video call and I don't see too many people like that. The point is that people need to see people who look just like them, okay? Who sound like them, dress like them, share their values, who are all saying, this is my issue. You don't have to be some radical in their mind of what an activist is. Wouldn't make a difference is also really important, that people need a sense that this actually will make a difference. And that's why being a member of a group like CCL is so important, because you're constantly hearing about the successes of all your other members. You're all experiencing that yourselves, whether it's getting another meeting with your local officials, whether it's getting another op-ed published in the local paper, and so on and so forth, and as well as the big ones, like the success you just had in Canada. Having that sense that this kind of work actually makes a difference makes a really big difference in terms of becoming active. And then I don't know who to contact and I wouldn't know what to say. Well, that's exactly what CCL teaches you, right? It's exactly right. You're going to organize around your elected officials, and here we're going to tell you exactly what to say. So the point is that there's this tremendous potential in this community. It's just about finding those people, recruiting them, training them, and then deploying them as effectively as possible. Okay, the other thing I wanted to quickly give you an idea of is the tools that we've made available. And so I'm going to drop out of this. Hopefully, there we go. And let's make this. And if you haven't seen it, these are our Yale Climate Opinion Maps. So we've taken our national results. Here you see nationally 61% of Americans are worried, but everyone always was asking, well, I'm working in Dallas, Texas. What can you tell me about Dallas? And I was always, the answer was, I can't tell you anything about it because I've never done a study in Dallas. So we've developed this tool that's available online at our website. You can see right there, where you can come and take a look at what's going on where you live, where you're working. So we've got this now down to the state level, the congressional level, the metro level, and down to the county level. And what this reveals is that that big 61% is actually hiding, it's obscuring all the diversity of worry across the country. Okay, that in fact—
Can you go full screen again, Anthony? Can you go full screen again? People are having difficulty seeing right now.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull it up this way.
Okay.
How's that? Is that any better?
The technical— Not yet. The technical department says you need to what?
You'll actually need to reshare your screen, and the internet browser that you're using is what you need to select.
Ah, okay. Sorry, bear with me for half a second. New share. How's that?
Yep.
Okay. Sorry.
Yep. Thank
okay.
You.
Great. So what you can see here is that there's actually tremendous diversity in how Americans are worried about this issue across the country. Now, we could go into this for a long time, but we're not going to, because I want to instead show you some really important things about what's going on. So I know everyone's immediately looking at, well, here's where I am. I'm going to switch to congressional districts, which simplifies things just a bit. So again, you see there's a fair amount of differences in the way people are worried about climate change. But here's that risk perception piece again. So harming future generations, all Americans everywhere think global warming will harm future generations. Okay, how about harm people in the United States? Not so much. How about harm me personally? Much less, okay? And if you didn't notice, the bluer, the fewer the proportion, the darker red, the higher the proportion of people, okay? So again, many people just don't see this as personally relevant, and that's why it's so important to help people connect the dots between climate change and their own lives. But the other thing I wanted to point to are some of these. Again, solutions, overwhelming support for clean energy everywhere in America. There isn't a, even in these districts in northern Texas, 78% of people support this, okay? So that again illustrates how much consensus there is on some of this. But the other thing, and you can see lots of things here, here's requiring fossil fuel companies to pay a carbon tax. Again, majority support everywhere in the country. But here's where I really wanna just end this particular piece. And that is, how often do we discuss global warming? Okay, because if, and what you see is that almost no one in America discusses climate change very often. And even worse, how often do you hear about it in the media? Very rarely. Okay. This is really important because what we've identified is that this is part of the spiral of silence. That if people aren't talking about climate change, if you don't hear about climate change, how important can it be? Okay. And just to give you a very concrete example, none of you had ever heard the word, at least in this context, caravan until about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And suddenly that became something that everybody was talking about and that was clearly being used to try to whip up votes, especially among Republicans, okay? Now suddenly that word has disappeared, and I can guarantee you that caravan was suddenly a important political agenda item leading up to the election, and it's gonna completely disappear from most of political discourse moment. It already has disappeared from much of this. And that's the point. If we're not talking about the issue, how important can it be? And that's why I think one of the most important things CCL members can do, other than obviously lobbying for the big policy asks that you are continuing to focus on, is just to get people talking about it where you live. How do you get your own friends and family talking about it? How do you get other people in your community talking about it? This is so, so important. And one resource that we at least have tried to bring to this and that we hope can support you in getting climate change talked about where you live is our own national radio program called Yale Climate Connections. Here's the website, which you can certainly come visit, but this program tries to connect the dots with just 90-second daily stories, a brand new one every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, helping Americans understand that climate change is here and now, that in fact, the impacts are happening right now. Here's just our current page. But likewise, the stories of solutions, okay? And they're incredible solutions. I personally find these so inspiring because of what everyday people are doing all across the country to solve this problem. This program now plays on over 500 stations across the country, okay? And here's just a map of where that is. So I would just suggest that if it's not playing on your own favorite public radio station or college station or community radio station, take a look, see if you like this, and then ask them to air it, because it's a way of getting this daily into the conversation, at least among the public radio audience, which turns out to be a really important opinion leading audience. And by the way, it's not just liberal Democrats. Conservatives listen to public radio as well. So anyway, this is just one way, and I really encourage you to think of lots of other ways that beyond the occasional letter to the editor, that you can bring climate change into daily conversation as much as possible in your own districts, because that helps shape the political environment in which your elected officials are making decisions. And with that, thank you very much.
Wow, Anthony, thank you so much. And could you just remind everybody how to get access to the resources that you just mentioned? Because I know there's a lot of people that are going to want to get the radio show posted, and they're just going to want their just a reminder of how to get to the other data points.
Sure. So yaleclimateconnections.org is one easy way to get to that and to visit that. And then our own website here, Yale Program on Climate Change Communication, you can reach right here at climatecommunication.yale.edu. And you'll find lots and lots of resources beyond the maps.
Wow. Well, again, thank you so much. If you want to stick around for the next 10 minutes, I know it's a Saturday, but if you want to stick around and hear the things we're going to be doing on the Hill and what we'll be doing for the next month, you're welcome to. But really, really helpful and very timely. And thank you for rearranging your schedule so you should be on the call, Anthony. I really, really appreciate it.
Sure. My pleasure. And good luck, everyone.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we'll take all the good luck we can get. You know, I was lucky when Pope Francis asked people to pray for him. You know, like, yeah, wish his luck and pray for it. Okay, good. All right. Thank you. Thank you again. So I want to go over a couple of things that happened since last month's call and then talk about what we're going to be doing this month. So first of all, in the middle of crazy campaign season, you were all incredibly prolific, 44 op-eds, over 300 total published pieces. So just a lot of output in terms of getting things out there in the media, 201 outreach events. So a lot of you were out there talking to the public, educating people, and 1,926 personal letters to members of Congress. So that's just a really nice piece of output. In terms of what happened in Washington State, 15% of all activity was from people who were CCL volunteers. And the number one caller, the person who made the most calls of anybody, was a CCLer and three of the top 10. So a lot of people put in an enormous amount of effort there. As Anthony said, there was over $30 million spent by the fossil fuel industry. Even with that $30 million, we got a higher percentage of the vote this time than we did last time. So that was a really, really nice effort. And then CCLers published 45 letters to the editor in 20 papers on this issue alone. So that was pretty remarkable. And then we got a note from our Washington State coordinators, Louise and John, and they were just kind of recapping what happened and, you know, in some cases licking our wounds and sometimes being excited about things and not being excited. And they wrapped it up by saying, yeah, all that happened and we put all that work in, and you know what we need to do now? get back to work. It was just such a beautiful communication. And Louise and John, thank you for that. That helped me because, you know, we put a lot into this and we wanted to succeed. And I was just happy to see that your response was, okay, let's get back at it. So here in Washington, D.C., we have 620 people coming to Capitol Hill. We'll be on the Hill the first day after Congress is back in business after the recess for the election. We have 410 appointments. There's over 80 people we won't see, but we've got over 80 new friends out there, new people that got elected to the House or Senate. And so part of what we're hoping you'll be doing in your meetings today, if you have one of those people, is beginning to strategize. Wouldn't surprise me if you've already started to reach out to them and start to engage them, but start to work on developing relationships with some new people that hopefully can add some new energy to what's happening. I'm excited to be what's going to be happening in the Climate Solutions Caucus. Where we were coming out of the 2016 election is there were 6 Republicans left. There's a lot more than that now. And it's going to be interesting to see what we rebuild. Obviously, Carlos Curbelo is an individual loss. But I know that some of the Republicans that we're talking to about becoming the next Republican lead are interested in making the bar just a little bit higher for being in the membership. And that could be a good thing. We'll see what happens, but that could be good. Okay, so what are we doing in Canada and the U.S.? And I want to talk about what's happening on the Hill a little bit part of the U.S. So first of all, for the first time in the history of their organization, the first action for Canada is to celebrate. I think that's a pretty good action. And that's a great thing to do. I mean, something amazing happened. And yeah, you know what? Let's just give ourselves a day to celebrate. And then the other things in Canada are about letters to the editor and Twitter. Okay. In terms of getting to the U.S. actions, one thing we'll be doing. Yeah, Ricky, you can screen share in a second. We're going to be doing is strategizing after the election, but the getting together and figuring out the way forward. The main thing, though, for November for us is I want us to all give everything we can to our year-end appeal that starts on Giving Tuesday and then goes through till the end of the year. As part of that, I want to tell you what we're doing on the Hill on Tuesday. So first of all, we're doing something that nobody can do. Nobody can go to Congress and say, here's what you say about solutions to climate change, and here's how that evolves over time, because nobody else has volunteers in every congressional district. So we're able to do something that's unique. But then here's the second part. If you've been in a lobby meeting, and most of the people on the call with us have, you always know there's a primary ask when we go to visit with congressional offices. And I don't think any other organization can make this ask. So if you can't see my screen, what we're going to be doing on Tuesday is we're going to be going into members of the House and the Senate. And we're going to be asking people to make the climate a bridge issue, not a wedge issue. Make the climate a bridge issue, not a wedge issue. Our ask goes on to say Americans do not lack for topics that wedge us apart. These days, it's harder to name topics that bring us together. This is too bad because strong majorities of Americans say they want elected officials to cooperate across political lines, to be respectful of each other, and to compromise. Bipartisan legislators see real boosts to their reputations from such behavior, as they are perceived as listening to voters and less self-interested. Further, opposite party voters like a legislator better when she or he bridges the partisan divide. It's time politicians started treating climate as a bridge issue. There are real political benefit to be gained, and the physics of the climate, graphically highlighted by the recent special report on a 1.5 degree centigrade target from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, make clear that it's time to act. We have some suggestions for how you could demonstrate a commitment to making climate an issue that bridges the divide in our republic. One, introduce or support bipartisan carbon fee and dividend legislation. The IPCC report recently affirmed that pricing carbon is the best first step to addressing the problem. Introduce, co-sponsor, and ultimately pass bipartisan legislation that reduces our emissions or helps us adapt to the changes climate has and will bring. Join or form bipartisan working groups, such as the Climate Solutions Caucus in the House, and create an active space for respectful inter-party dialogue on the topic. hold hearings on the topic of policy solutions to our changing climate, rather than on the settled science of the problem. Schedule bipartisan briefings with members of your state or region that focus on local impacts and highlight experts from your district, state, or region. Over the last 11 years, Citizens Climate Lobby has grown to include over 100,000 committed supporters by emphasizing our values of appreciation and respect. We have shown that these are principles around which you can build a movement. We ask you to embrace these values as well, and in particular, on the challenge of climate change. This is an issue we can no longer afford to ignore. Okay, so what we're going to be asking you to do from now till the end of the year is to reach out to everybody you possibly can and invite them to donate to CCL. You know, it's like what Anthony said, a lot of people just never get asked. Let's make sure this time we do ask them. So, and as you also know, there are 100 people who've identified themselves as climate guardians. They've committed $10,000 each to create $1 million matching pool. We've never had anything like that. And so what we want to do is reach out to everybody we can, talk to everybody we can. And I think for some of you, there may be some chapters who it could be kind of fun to actually take it to another level. Not everybody, but for some chapters, you might say to yourself, you know, I think our chapter would like to match one of the climate guardians. So we're going to make sure that our chapter raises $10,000. Now, we don't have any way of helping you find out if you do this or not. We obviously can't tell you how much people donate. That's private information. But if you wanted to do that, if that would be fun, if that would be exciting for your chapter, then I recommend you do it. You know, the Intergovernmental Panel told us we don't have much time to act. I think CCL always looks at that a little bit different than everybody else. You know the old Chinese saying that says, when's the best time to plant a tree? And the answer is 20 years ago. You know, I think if you asked us, when would be the best time to have a carbon tax? 20 years ago. What's the second best time to plant a tree? Today. So that's the case for us also, is if we couldn't do it 20 years ago, we're going to do it today. Okay, last thing, I want to just remind you kind of the background of what we're doing, some of the things that Martin Luther King has said. He said, darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about the things that matter. I don't know about you, but I feel really lucky to be part of an organization that from the first day I joined it, let me know that this is the way it wanted me to work. Privileged to be part of that.